Nick Schinkel, the director of the West Lafayette Public Library, brought into the WBAA studios the book, The Spotter's Guide to Urban Engineering. It's an illustrated field guide to the technology that keeps our cities and towns working. Schinkel begins his review by reading from the book.
We're all experts at using urban engineering. When you grow up with water on tap, paved roads, and garbage collection, you don't have to read a manual or pass an exam in order to use it. But as a result, we pay very little attention to a whole range of complex and interconnected systems that actually support our way of life. The Spotter's Guide to Urban Engineering provides an introduction to the technology that underpins modern life, throwing light on the anonymous industrial sites, unremarkable roads, strange towers and masts, bewildering electrical installations, and myriad bridge designs we see every day, as well as on the hidden world of pipes, drains, and cables that lies beneath our feet. This book explains the detail behind the design, the why, what, when, and where that answers the fascinating questions you never thought to ask. Well, that's from the introduction to The Spotter's Guide to Urban Engineering. Wish I could claim that sentence as my own, but that was actually theirs. Infrastructure. It's a term that's bandied about on TV. Goodness knows MSNBC commentator Rachel Maddow seems enthralled by the subject, as does the administration of Governor Mitch Daniels right here in Indiana. So infrastructure, we talk about it around the water cooler, probably around the kitchen table nowadays. We're all, regardless of our political persuasions, interested in improving and upgrading and expanding our communities and our nation's infrastructure. But just what are we talking about when we bandy this term around? Well, The Spotter's Guide to Urban Engineering really does a good show and tell of those engineering marvels we call infrastructure and, as the book told us, that we see around us every day. That said, I'm not sure to whom this book is actually aimed. I think dyed-in-the-wool engineers will know a lot about this stuff already. But perhaps there are lots of us laypeople out there who are curious about all those engineered things that surround us. I gotta say it was a lot of fun to peruse, and I did learn a few things about the larger human-built world that lies around me, lies around all of us. I think we're all familiar with the ubiquitous field guides to birds and trees and insects that are a staple of childhood school science projects and, for many of us, important guides to the natural world as we grow older as well. But who thought there would be a guide to the human-built engineered world available? So often we disdain the human-built world as boring, unsightly, or even ugly. It gets in the way of our enjoyment of the natural world, doesn't it? And we won't get into a philosophical discussion of the natural versus the human-made world here, although I think one could have a rousing discussion on that alone. In the book, there is whimsy. Talk about man-made or human-made engineering. There is whimsy in this book. For instance, in the subsection of a chapter entitled Water Tower, we see some, you know, interesting water towers that you'll see dotted around the landscape, including one in Rochester, Minnesota, which is a water tower made to look just like a corn cob. Not the kind of thing one normally thinks, at least not the kind of thing I normally think of when I think of urban infrastructure, but an awfully nice addition to perhaps prompt us to look a little bit more closely at that human-engineered world around us. There's acknowledgement that some human engineering feats are built from deep historical wisdom. For instance, the section on dams tells us about some very, very ancient dams that have been discovered, having been erected along the Nile in Egypt and along the rivers in Pakistan and India by ancient civilizations. And some of these engineering feats are built for their longevity. You might guess that we're talking about aqueducts here, and indeed we are. Two, there are modestly worded warnings about environmental dangers, such as all those tailing problems from mining and strip mining's many other problems, to go along with the praise for human engineering and intellectual feats, because the book certainly does a great job of looking at both the potential problems or the real problems that human engineering has made for us, but also celebrates some of those great feats of engineering that humankind has managed to achieve. Let me read just a little bit from the chapter on reservoirs of all places, where we learn a little bit more about underground cisterns. I found this particularly fascinating. This is written in the book. Istanbul stands on the remains of settlements dating back to 660 BCE, which include hundreds of ancient water cisterns. While many are plain, others display architecture fit for a sultan's palace. These underground storage chambers, which held water for times of drought and siege, were filled via aqueducts that stretched to the outskirts of the city. The largest and most impressive contain ornately carved columns reused from even older buildings. The basilica cistern, built in the 6th century, contains 336 marble columns and covers an area of 100,000 square feet. There's also a marvelous color photo of part of that basilica cistern, and I must say, doesn't look exactly like a place you'd store water. Looks like a place you'd go for perhaps a religious service with high church intentions. And then, of course, we also learn about those modern marvels of human engineering. In particular, I'll draw your attention to modern highways that have been built in Canada and in Australia, interestingly enough. We learn that the Trans-Canada Highway runs from the Atlantic to the Pacific, a distance of almost 5,000 miles. That's a long way. And Australia's Highway 1 runs all the way around the continent and is some 9,000 miles in length. Now that is a human engineering feat. The organization of the book is of interest in itself, too. It's divided into chapters referring to different types of human-built infrastructure engineering, from the extraction of raw materials, which includes such things as pit mines and strip mines and cement plants, through water, power, transport, communication, and we wrap up with waste. As any good field guide will, The Spotter's Guide to Urban Engineering is chock full of clear color photos, more than 300 color illustrations. I'll note that within each chapter, a wide range of structures and buildings is presented. For instance, in the chapter focused on communication, we find entries for roadways, sidewalks, and bike lanes, but also for traffic signs, railroad tracks and signals, light rail systems, tunnels, several types of bridges, lighthouses, airport terminals, runways, and traffic control towers. It's rather thorough as a guidebook in its own way. Each engineered edifice is given a 2, maybe 3-page examination, giving us a summary of what the infrastructure is, why the item is important, and a layperson's explanation, thank goodness, of how it all works and or operates, sometimes breaking down the item into its constituent parts or types. And then there is the book's purpose. It's worked surprisingly well as a field guide, I think, given the variety of human-built stuff it attempts to cover. For example, illustrating an Eastern robin is illustrating an Eastern robin. One does not need to have various different types of Eastern robins illustrated in order to give you an idea of what a robin on your lawn would actually look like. Can we be as blithely confident that we can say the same when choosing a generic illustration for a quarry, or for a pumping station, or for a fossil fuel power station? No, we probably can't. But the book does attempt to give us some sense, not only of the variety of what quarries might look like, or pumping stations might look like, or fossil fuel power stations might look like, while still not taking on the encyclopedic kind of page numbering that this would have to do. What's missing? Well, The Spotter's Guide to Urban Engineering does much very well as a field guide to our human-built infrastructure, but sadly, and perhaps inevitably, there are no colorful maps of the U.S. or Britain or Africa or Australia showing us where we are most likely to find a pipeline or a waste disposal plant or whatever of particular interest. Now, granted, most urban areas, the focus of this book, are likely to sport one or more of these engineering marvels nearby. In fact, if you look through the book and you start thinking about what we have available, or what we could see anyway, in Greater Lafayette alone, almost everything in this book can be found somewhere within reasonable driving distance of Lafayette, Indiana. This is indeed common urban engineering. And indeed, we have a lot of urban engineering just within driving distance of where we live. But still, I wonder if there are spectacular examples of many of these engineering marvels that it would be great to view in person. For instance, that 9,000-mile highway running around Australia, while we might not want to drive the entire 9,000 miles, that's still a darn impressive piece of human engineering and might well be worth seeing. We did learn, as I said, about that water tower made to look like a corn cob in Rochester, Minnesota. I wish, actually, that the book had had more of those kind of quirky or spectacular kind of engineering landmarks listed within its pages. But perhaps that could be an addition to the next edition of the Spotter's Guide to Urban Engineering, if indeed we get one. Let's wrap up by reading from the last pages of the book itself. For whatever reason, they choose to conclude their look at urban engineering with waste. And the last type of waste that they choose to look at is the wrecking yard. Now, I know from driving around rural Indiana that you can see quite a few wrecking yards. Many of them are now behind some kind of foliage screen or some sort of human-made screen to block it from our eyesight. But still, you can see the occasional car or other kind of mechanical products sticking up there. So even within Greater Lafayette, we indeed can see wrecking yards. Who would know that indeed it's an engineering marvel? But here's a... Here's a bit from that chapter telling us why indeed we might want to look at a wrecking yard. The sophistication of the wrecking yard ranges from a couple of cars half stripped in a yard corner to a warehouse with individual pieces carefully wrapped and logged into a computerized inventory. The business model of your local secondhand spare parts dealer mirrors that of the international commodities market. When world metal prices are high, scrapyards will collect and even pay you for your wreck. When new restrictive legislation is being brought in, the economy is strong, and the demand for scrap is low, then the wrecking yard will charge you. Wrecking yards may not appear to be at the cutting edge of sophisticated environmental protection solutions, but by recycling old or damaged vehicles and promoting the reuse of vehicle parts which are already manufactured, they reduce pollution and resource demand. Well, who knew? The Spotter's Guide to Urban Engineering, from roads to sophisticated aqueduct systems to the local wrecking yard. It's a book about infrastructure and technology in the modern landscape, what you can see, and why you might want to look at it. It's available at all of our fine local libraries, including the West Lafayette Public Library.
That was Nick Schinkel, the director of the West Lafayette Public Library. He's reviewed The Spotter's Guide to Urban Engineering, Infrastructure and Technology in the Modern Landscape by Claire Barrett and Ian Whitelaw, and it's published by Firefly Books.